Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Let's say someone just clicked on this episode, right? Thousands, tens of thousands of people who listen to this.
Oh, nice.
And for some reason, they have no idea who you are, right? Why should they even continue listening to this episode?
Because I am the Beyonce of open source. And you gotta listen to find out why.
You're the Beyonce of open source.
Yeah, it's a title I claim.
Yes, I've seen that on your GitHub. I've seen that. I think you put that on your Twitter too. Or you have put it on your Twitter.
I have put it on my Twitter. I think I'm a Beyonce advocate on my GitHub. And
Beyonce advocate. Yeah,
and it's a thing that people can Google and find out if they want to know the secret sauce behind who B Dougie is.
What does that mean? Beyonce of open source.
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time working at GitHub, almost 5 years. And GitHub at the time had 24 million developers when I joined that used the platform. And my first conference talk as a GitHub employee was in Shanghai, China. And a month prior, Beyonce had performed, which is 25 million people live in Shanghai. The concept there is like everyone touches GitHub, and I get to be the face. I was the face of that company for quite a bit. And
literally.
Yeah, and what Beyonce does really well is she has the beehive. And she has good mentorship, and she had Chloe and Hallie came through as well. Through that, and now she's got her with Blue Ivy's. Now she's starting to perform, yep. And so she's got like a really good system to level up other folks around her, and that's what I did at GitHub. What I'm still doing at open source is leveling folks up around me, and like making sure there's like a door open for other folks.
Talking about that, and this I wasn't even thinking of bringing this up, but the people you brought on, like DevRel, I'm assuming you hired them. For example, my former colleague Pachi. Did you hire Pachi?
Yeah, I did hire Pachi.
She's amazing.
I poached Pachi.
No, thank you. Thank you for poaching her away. We could talk about that later, too. Actually, my manager from that company will be in his pod in a couple of weeks, too. So thank you for that, by the way. Pachi's amazing. She's very energetic. She's an amazing person, amazing human being. But one interesting thing about you that a lot of people don't know unless they listen to your podcasts or read anything that you write was that your journey into tech was very interesting, right? Not the normal route. I mean, all right, unless you had a computer science degree, the only way to in tech is work your butt off, right?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about you, right, and as you already mentioned, you were the director of DevRel at GitHub, right? Now you have your own startup. Like, dang, that's a big jump. Director of DevRel to have your own startup. But what people don't know is that your first job after getting your degree in finance, right? Your degree in finance was collections. And why is this very interesting to me?
It's interesting this you picked up on that because it's like a quick footnote and stuff that I mentioned. And I don't mention it very often, but yeah, please continue.
What's so amazing about that? Well, for me, mine was sales. I didn't have a degree, but that was my first legit job, sales, call center. The loan forgiveness program, oh gosh, right? And so that's that's my sales job, and I was good at it. But what's so interesting about that is that you showed me, and I feel like you can show a lot of people that, yes, your first job after getting your degree or whatsoever wasn't in tech. Your first job wasn't writing a lot of code, but either way, you still made it to a worldwide renowned GitHub director of DevRel, now you're on startup, right? So how does that happen? Collections to director, to CEO.
I think it really comes down to like, and I think what really was nice about like career switching into writing code as opposed to doing computer science is that you have a different perspective you can apply to your job. So I think the first thing people say, like you get your first job as an engineer, it's like go understand the problem you're trying to solve. Like it's one thing that you could, like let's say you work in like retail. You're working at what? You're doing the website for, I'm trying to think, Forever 21 or whatever. It doesn't matter. But if you don't understand how people shop for clothes, you don't understand like all those like how a shopping cart works, you're gonna continue to make mistakes, and like you're gonna probably not have a job after 6 months or maybe even 3 months after the probation period. But if you can go use the product and understand it, or even go talk to customers, not that every engineer needs to go talk to customers, but I think as an engineer, you should at least understand what you're doing, like understand what's happening on the other side of there. So like what I found out really quickly is I love talking about developer tools, and I love using developer tools. I love building new sites because that's how I could level up at the age of 27 is when I learned how to code. So I could level up as quickly as possible to get the next role. Not even like, I didn't need to be like senior engineer. I just wanted to like level up. So when I landed the job at Netlify, I was deploying Netlify sites where I left like 500 sites deployed. We had hit almost 500,000 developers on the platform. I joined and was like 24,000.
I'm one of them.
Yeah. And it was just one of those situations where I became just like the model user to like ramp up and ship sites as fast as possible. And like, I just like what I'm doing, and I like talking to people who like what I'm building.
One thing I want to emphasize is, how does collections get you to where you are, though? Right? I still get those phone calls. Well, I'm not saying it's from collections. I paid off all my credit cards. But, you know, you get that phone call, unknown number, you don't know who it's from. How does that help you, though? Did that help you at all? Was that just, you know, I mean, it's a job that you need, right? You need to survive. But how does that help you? How can that help anyone?
Yeah. So the way it helped me is, like, I was very introverted. Like, I didn't know how to do sales. I learned it on the job. Every job I learned on the job something. But collections, because I was so nervous and I knew I had to make, like, 30 calls, like, in a day. And had to, like, basically just find out if this person was going to pay or not. So I built a framework for myself. And, like, why it helped me learn how to code is I built a framework of I pick up the phone, I dial the customer, take a deep breath, and then they say hello. A lot of times people just don't pick up because, you know, nowadays you scam likely. But back in the day, this is like back 2000.
There was no caller ID?
No. This was like 2009, 2008 when I did collections. I only did it for a year, but the framework was, hey, this is Brian. I worked at the YMCA. That's why they did collections for.
YMCA.
And I was like, hey, this is Brian from the YMCA. It looks like you have a such and such account at this branch. And it looks like for the past 2 months, your payment did not go through. Were there any changes to your account? And that was a framework I had. I would just pause, not speak. And sometimes people would hang up. A lot of times people would be like, oh, you know what? The change was I have a new expiration. Because once I found out that was like the common repeated, I just got a new credit card in the mail just a couple days ago. Like, new expiration. It's now 20 whatever. I won't share in case you guys got my number or anything like that. What I'm getting at is, like, that framework is how I was able to get the job. And then once I realized, like, the other person on the other line was just a human, it made it even so much easier. Because, like, sometimes people would be like, oh, yeah, that was my mom. She passed. And, like, oh, I'm so sorry. And, like, we just sent flowers. Because, like, we're the YMCA. It wasn't, like, about trying to, like, crush people's souls and get as much money as possible. It was just like, ask the question. And I think when I finally got my first sales job, it was the same deal. It was just ask the question. And I was actually just talking earlier today at coffee. Like, the last deal I did before I left sales to go do a full-time engineering role was just because I could pick up a phone and ask like a framework-based question of like, hey, how's your day? What deals are you excited about? And people would tell me, like, one person in Philadelphia told me about a deal. We're doing Wi-Fi. I was selling IT equipment. Doing Wi-Fi in Philadelphia Eagles Stadium. They built a new, brand new stadium. They were going to put Wi-Fi in it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, what else is in the pipeline? Oh, yeah, Tennessee Titans is next. And I'm like, oh, cool. Jeez. So I hang up the phone. I'm like, hey, I got a big, I tell my boss I got a big deal in the pipe. We're going to figure this out. And that was the last deal I closed. Biggest bonus I ever had was like the one I left
was
the job on.
The confidence that you gained? The confidence to be able to, you can close a deal? Or was it just the confidence that, you know what? Just learning how to speak to another human as a human. What was it?
It was definitely to learn confidence and learn the framework. So like when I learned how to code, like I learned to Ruby on Rails. It was a framework. The confidence of running Rails, generate whatever, or scaffold, whatever, gave me the confidence of like, oh, I can build within this framework. And what I learned really quick when I got my first job, I didn't really know anything below, like how networking worked, how APIs worked. But I just had the confidence to like work in that ecosystem, which I got my first job. So when it came to like sales, having a conversation like you in sales, this is basically like if you learn the signals of like, oh, I don't know, I got to talk to my wife. It's like, okay, well, You know, who's running the house? You or your wife? But, you know, that's a whole other conversation. Feel free. Anybody who's married and has a wife that runs the show, like, totally fine. But what I'm getting at is, like, if you're not the decision maker, you got to get off the phone with them. It's like, oh, well, who makes the decisions in the house? Can I talk to your wife? And it's the same thing in tech sales as well. It's like, oh, I guess you're not the person who pays the bills around here, huh? Well, how about I talk to your boss?
Oh.
Not that I was that. Sorry. What I would say is I'm not that. I'm not that on. Sorry. I'm not that. What do you call it? Forward. But I guess the secret sauce I learned, the frameworks that I learned, was through one book, and the book was called How to Win Friends and Influence People, and I would read that book every year since I started the collections job. Every year, we read the book. I have the audiobook now. No, I didn't listen to it. It's been 2 years probably since. No, yeah. I did listen to it last summer. But I just like listen to the audiobook and like just remember some of the case studies that are in there.
Yeah.
Because like the thing about, and like you'll know with like podcasting, if you get the other person to talk about themselves, their favorite subject, that's usually the gateway. And like if you can, like what I've learned with like even like doing founder-led sales as a startup founder, if I can get them in person talking about themselves over a coffee or a drink or a bagel or whatever, like now you feel good because you're fed, and then you feel even better because like now you're the star, you're the main character.
Get to talk about yourself.
Oh yeah,
it's amazing. I mean, that's why I love podcasts. I like talking to people and I love listening too. It's fun. One thing I want to bring up because I think this applies to a lot of people, especially me, or maybe especially after the pandemic because I think the pandemic did this to me. I became an introvert. I was always, whenever I would go to parties, I would be the person that would try to get everyone to hang out. I was a person that would try to be the middle of attention everywhere I go. Pandemic came. It's hard to do that, especially in DevRel, where I travel the world after party, right? After every conference.
Yep.
I kind of shy away more from that now, right? And so trying to fight that still to this day. But aside from me, though, for the average developer who's like introverted, because I feel like from what you're sharing, soft skills can go a much longer way than being only technically skilled.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Like the ability. And so when I joined, so Netlify, I figured out the sort of unlock, which is just talk to people who are deploying sites and ask them like, does this feature work for you or does it not? Not that I was a PM. Because the other thing that I like going into writing code, I never want to go back to sales. I never wanted to do any business stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like even going and getting my MBA, I was like, I just want to write code. Because I knew as soon as you stop writing code and go do the business things, like that's your career, or you become a PM. And I think there's no knock against anybody who moves outside of developer engineering. Like even you made the switch to developer relations, like. It's like that one cutover, it then becomes your career. And then once I was ready for that, then it made sense.
Mm.
And my career like 10x'd. Like honestly, like I tripled my salary going to DevRel.
Oh, trust me. I can't wait to get into that. And I think you're open with sharing your salaries in tech as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, like I'm a founder. So like I've got a whole different other founder salary, which is not, it could be a little underwhelming sometimes. But I think also transparent salaries. Like I've been, like not every podcast or every... Like, I don't sit on my own content. I don't share my salary. But I think it's valuable, especially now I'm a year removed from my GitHub role, like being able to share my experience. Like, I don't share my last salary because I want to make sure the rest of the team feels comfortable and protected. But I share my salary up into GitHub in my first role at GitHub and pre-Microsoft salary. Like, my post-Microsoft acquisition GitHub salary was, like, insane.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, a lot of folks – and this is, like, a big – there's a difference between working for a company that's successful and taking stock and a company that has stock for the sake of like they think they're going to be successful. So like I've mentored a lot of folks in getting into engineering and like my DMs are open. I'd prefer you join my open source community and ask questions at the open. But a lot of folks will like take all salary and no stock as a compensation package, or they like chase the 200K salary like base pay.
Oh.
And I think you leave a ton on the table when you're like, oh, I just want the 200K because that's the badge of honor.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing right now in the industry is like the tech is getting a little interesting. So if you got a 200K salary in 2022, you're laid off in 2023. And I say that, like, hit me up in the DMs if I'm wrong about this, but what I'm seeing consistently because I was hiring in 2022 is that you were basically at the ceiling if you took that role. So like if you're not still providing that same value, like you're probably looking for your next thing.
Oh, okay. There's so much to unpack with that. I want to talk about life from pre-IPO to post-IPO, right? But before, okay. But before that, that's me. Everyone knows how much I make.
The company you're working at is doing a pretty good job.
Yeah,
I'm very familiar actually with their valuation and everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we have a lot of money in the bank, right? And everyone knows that. We had layoffs. I'm a company.
Yep.
Right. And when I joined this company, they asked me, which one do you want more? Which is it? Was it base salary or options? I said salary. Right. So okay. I just want, you know, that prideful thing. Right. Self-taught, yeah. Almost dropped out of high school, college dropout, getting 2K salary, having dyslexia. So I just wanted to be able to reach that just from my own self goals. But now I live off less than half my salary. I don't need to make 200K. Right. It's nice. I don't need that money. And when I look back, I kind of feel like maybe I should have asked for a lot more options instead.
Yeah. The one thing that I think everyone who's listening is like, that chance to get options is at the time you sign the offer. Very few times in startup world, you get like, oh, hey, you're doing a great job. Let's give away more of the company. Yeah. Cause at the end of the day, like you're vesting over a 4-year cliff. So 1-year cliff, 3 more years to vest after that. So 4 years total. Mm-hmm. At the end of 4 years, usually the company is completely different. So like the skill set that they hired you for in particular at year one is very different than the skill set they need at year four.
My job a year ago were very different to what I do now. Very different.
Yeah. So like unless you scale as fast as the company, I know Airbyte is scaling very fast. Mm-hmm. They scaled very fast a couple years ago. I've talked to the founders a couple years back. And I guess what I'm getting at is like it's that time. But the caveat that I'd also mention is like, actually, I was listening to a podcast yesterday around like a lot of folks, if you don't have your personal burn rate or you have debt or whatever, mm-hmm. like take the salary. It makes a lot of sense because if you can lower your personal burn, you can take you can roll the dice on taking more equity. And like the way it worked for me is I moved to San Francisco for a company that didn't pan out. I didn't take any of that equity or purchase it. But when I joined Netlify as employee number 3,
please tell me that changed. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, it did change. Yeah. And it was a decent amount of equity. Yeah. And one of the few situations.
You were employee number 3.
Correct.
So that's seed money or pre-seed.
Yeah. At the time, it was seed. They just closed a seed. And it was those valuations and how much, like they raised 2.14 million. But basically low 2 million. And that was like at valuations pre-days. I think the valuation might be public, but I won't share it because I'm not sure if it is. Their valuation obviously over $1 billion now. Over $2 billion now, I think, was public.
And that's pennies in options. That's pennies per option for you. Oh, my gosh, correct. For Netlify.
Yeah. But the crazy part is like my role at Netlify, I ended up getting offered a salary that was too low. So I ended up joining just like a little quick renegotiation at 95K. Mm-hmm. Which in 2016 it was on the lower tier, but it had a lot of proof. So like in hindsight, as a founder today, like I totally get like where the offer came from. It wasn't the 6-figure salary that everyone was touting, which like the 100K is like 200K today. Like there's a whole nother world today. Tech wasn't as ingested with capital as it is today. Yep. Like there's so many LPs and VCs, new VCs today. But I took the role because at the time, the company I worked with before was going down. I loved the product that we were working on, and the CTO came directly from Docker. It was the number 3 contributor. Jeez. And the CEO was a genius. Yeah. So to level up as an engineer, 100%, yes, I'll do my year here, vest out of the cliff, and like walk away to go to like Stripe, Netflix, whatever other company.
Everyone says Stripe or Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, those are two companies I've actually talked to. And like I've interviewed at all of them. Like I've never gotten the job that I've applied to. All the jobs I got in my career have been folks that reached out, but I still apply the job. So I just want to also have that caveat because I know I mentioned the state that I have people just reach out to me and like, hey, I've got a job for you. But every 6 months, I've always been applying for jobs, like through GitHub, always apply every 6 months. And the reason for that is I want to know what my value is. Mm-hmm. So I actually had a bit, but like at GitHub, I had an offer in hand to leave. During the pandemic to go join a very up and coming startup. And for the sake of like, none of that information is public, but the startup was going to give me 3% at a Series A valuation.
Is the company still doing well right now?
They're doing excellent right now. Yeah. And but at that time, I was like, you know what? I don't think I had lowered my entire burn because of Microsoft acquisition stock. And then RSUs. I was getting bonus. Yeah. Basically, at the time, I think I was pretty close to 100K during my time at GitHub the first couple years between bonus and stock and RSUs. So I was getting that much, more than I was getting at Netlify, just being at GitHub. Yeah. So at that point, I was like, I just had my second kid, and I was comfortable.
Stability.
And my career was, kind of going up and to the right. Yeah. So like the stability, like I was on the cusp of like getting extremely comfortable, but I just wanted to stick around a bit. So GitHub basically matched all of that. Nice. So I stuck around because I got a good amount of match RSUs from Microsoft, which was a stable company that pays a dividend.
Huge.
So, and I'm being very upfront and clear because I know there's a lot of like misinformation around like just do this and get a fake job or whatever and this and that. And I think transparency and like sharing this information, I'm not going to be a fang guru or whatever, or, you know, get your Microsoft job. But I think just having enough information when you go into the conversation, because I think it's a lot of times, because I've hired a lot of folks at GitHub and also even at OpenSauce, people come in hot and heavy with like their idea of what the ideal salary is and how much stock they should get. And I don't have a lot of, like, I have so much negotiating power as a hiring manager and a founder that I'm willing to hear, like, why you think you deserve this much. But I'll tell you exactly, this is where we are in the company. Like, even, like, GitHub, when I was hiring somebody at GitHub, like, we ended up, they passed on us and went somewhere else. And similarly, the DevRel team, because they had a minimum threshold of salary. And they actually wanted to forego Microsoft stock for that reason. And when you're at a company at the FANG level or Microsoft level, every year you get a bonus. So every year, if you get cash, it's how good of a job you did the previous year. So that's the cash bonus. If you get RSUs or stock, it's how bad they want you to stay. Mm. And I was at the point where GitHub wanted me to stay bad.
Wow.
So I had, like, leaving GitHub, I had, like, 2 years of burn just in savings.
Yeah.
Just a personal like savings to go start a company. If I had to, I took a salary, but if I had to go without a salary, like I've had that backup plan because I was able to like stay stable. So like hindsight 2020, you always miss a shot you don't take. Mm-hmm. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. I don't think I missed an opportunity because I didn't take that one role because I had the offer in hand. Instead, I think I had a better opportunity because I got to accelerate my brand and I got to kick off the GitHub TikTok and take over the GitHub YouTube channel and like
promotion grow
GitHub's brand in a way. Yeah, I was able to like validate me as B Dougie, the Beyonce of GitHub at the time. And that was like invaluable. Like that's the other thing, you like a lot of folks create content, they have their own like stuff and they do on the side and the fun like meetup talks, or they don't do any of that. And because I was a career switcher, because my brand validates me. Like there was a story about Kevin Hart was like, he'd do a movie and people would be like, oh yeah, you got to tweet this or use your social to promote the movie. And he'd be like, no, I'm not doing that because you got to pay me for my brand. Like, you got me in the movie, but you got to pay me for the promotion. So if you want to promote this thing, like pay me. And I think it's the same thing in DevRel. Like there's a lot of folks. I saw one DevRel person who was at a small company, his story to share, but he pushed back because he had a very large following and they wanted him specifically to just tweet every single announcement because personal tweets are valuable, but I think there's it does dilute it and it dilutes your personal brand. So like DevRel at GitHub, 100%, do whatever you want with your personal brand. We have the GitHub platform for GitHub for you to showcase the skills and for people to find. But like when you leave GitHub, you should have something to like land on and you should have your own brand. And that was always my mantra as anybody who worked under me.
Branding is extremely important. So, you know, everyone knows, even at my company, I'm always interviewing, right? And I'm always interviewing, see my value, you know, and it's fun, to be honest. It gives me a way to get to know so many people. And one of the companies I was interviewing at, they asked if I was to join the company, would I mind publishing their tutorials on my YouTube channel? Now, they were willing to pay like $250,000 a year, but I make that with just a couple of sponsors alone already. So that's not enough, right, for me to sacrifice my brand. And it's so interesting how there are companies that want to hire you literally because of your following.
Yeah, and I think that's it's such a, and I get it. I get why you would do that. Like, obviously, like, I watched a Mario movie, and like, Chris Pratt is Mario, but like, he's indistinguishable to any other person who would have a voice change, or even like Bowser and Jack Black. You can kind of get it's Jack mm-hmm. Black based on like the mannerisms, but it's like they're the names and the title, and that's why they chose them, because they have a very unique. I think Jack Black more than Chris Pratt, but like, anybody could have played Mario in that movie. But the brand of Chris Pratt, and his stars on the rise, like, of course you're gonna hire those people. And like, years ago, Microsoft had a DevRel team on Azure, and had all the heavy hitters, like everyone you had seen in the space was on that team. Yeah, and I think Chloe's on the tail end mm-hmm. of that team too as well. Like, and again, her story yeah. to share. But eventually, like, you have too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, everyone's got their own brand and doing their own thing. They're traveling across the country, and like, they're still doing their job, and they're doing a great job at it. But it gets a little distracting. And like, where I come from a place, like, I'd rather go find the up and comers where we can grow the brand together, and like, nothing that we already do gets in the way. And we were very specific about recruiting wow. for GitHub on the DevRel team, which was like, it'd be great to, like, again, like, Chloe's got a great brand. Chloe would do great at GitHub. But at the end of the day, like, what we really wanted on GitHub is somebody who did not know mm-hmm. DevRel. And the reason for that is, like, every time you come to GitHub, like, GitHub, DevRel, everything's successful.
That's amazing.
Like, if you tweet GitHub's, anything from GitHub's Twitter, which the DevRel team does have quite a bit of control there, 2.5 million yeah. followers. So no matter what you do, you amazing. Will have success. So now the choice is, like, you can make a choice of, like, what is successful. So then you can really think about, like, oh, wow, we did a GitHub Action Hackathon, GitHubHackathon.com. My brainchild, like, my ideas, this basically just turned it into what we ended up launching. And so the idea was, like, you submit a GitHub Action, and the way it gets approved is mm-hmm. through GitHub Actions, which is also open source. Like, you'd see the actions working through the approval process. It was like a very nuanced way to approach GitHub Actions to understand, like, there's more mm-hmm. than just CI. There's like compute and like powerful things that you can do and hook into serverless functions. And like, that entire process, like I said, it was my brainchild. But what I'm getting at is, like, a lot of stuff I shipped, I didn't put my name yeah. on. Because I knew if I put my name on it, like, I became the guy mm-hmm. that did the thing. And I'm not the guy that does the thing all the time. But the power of not putting my name on it, but like, the entire ramp up, everyone internally knew exactly what was happening, because we're GitHub, you could see everything within the organization. I'd get a ton of accolades and DMs, but then I'd have like the person who partnered with me, like, hey, can you just do the, like, why don't you take it over the hurdle? Mm-hmm. So like, quite a few projects I touched, I was like, oh, let me just be the person that can partner with yeah. you to get this shipped. Because the challenge I had, I was a Beyonce at GitHub, everyone would reach out to me about a project. So if we had to ship like a new feature, like mm-hmm. the GitHub README, the profiles where you can like put in a bunch of stuff in your GitHub README. The go-to-market was like, it was a hack day project at GitHub. And then it turned into a public feature. And we had like a cool stuff that people did with it. But at the time of launch, it was two weeks prior to CodeLand, mm-hmm. which was CodeLand's like the Code Newbie powered event. So I'm like, CodeLand, why don't we just like make every Code Newbie create a developer profile on their GitHub. We'll provide a bunch of templates based on our hackathon. And at CodeLand, it was all remote at the time during the pandemic. You would reply inside of our announcement, like, here's a feature. Anybody who submits a edited profile, like, mm-hmm. we would just send them out swag. And the thing is, like, GitHub has such an engine of, like, I don't need to do anything about sending swag. I just yeah. add a name to a list. And then the data is collected. Mm-hmm. They submit the form. It goes directly to the third-party contract team that ships out GitHub swag. It's like, no effort for me. I'm just like, I get yeah. you 320 names, which I think was around 320, of participants, and like, the thing just happens. So going back to like, we needed to like reteach DevRel, the folks yeah. who already had experience. So the best thing we did was like hire a junior developer advocate back in, I think, was it 2021, after I declined the role to not leave the company and join. I ended up taking the role as director, and then I hired my first developer advocate, which was Rizelle.
I'm meeting with Rizelle on Monday for an interview. Yeah, so okay, that's exciting. And you know, what's really cool, so about you bringing people up, and Rizelle, I'm seeing her growth, and even her interactions with everyone on Twitter. When she goes up and give a talk, everyone adds her on Twitter. I'm like, what is this? This is so amazing. I don't know. Who is it? I didn't know who she was at first. And now I do because of that.
Yeah.
Right? And so what you did there at GitHub, first of all, I want to thank you because, yeah, she made an impact at the company. But more importantly, from what I've seen, you impacted the people who worked under you, their lives, which not a lot of managers can say.
Yeah. Right?
Not a lot of people, and that's huge. I mean, I've worked in DevRel for now 3 years. You know, not all the managers are great,
yeah.
Right? Or this no DevRel.
I've had bad managers, and it's like what you can do in a bad situation really proves what you can do in a good situation. So, like, I've had bad managers in sales.
That's normal.
Yeah, and I've worked with the worst. So, like, even if I have a bad manager, I'm a self-managed person. So, like, if you just give me a little bit of room, I can show you what I can do. And as, like, an underrepresented person in tech, and it's, like, it's a challenge because the reason why I always wanted to, like, write code because I didn't want to do, like, sales or marketing or other stuff like that, because the assumption is, like, oh, wow, you're in the sales team, black dude. Like, you're working on customer success or whatever. And it's, like, no, I'm not, like, you know, the quote-unquote diversity hire. Like, I did put the work in to get here. But, like, yeah, like, we had so Open Sauce has a YouTube channel. We do a podcast called The Secret Sauce. Rizelle is on that podcast. And we kind of, like, talk, like, behind the scenes of, like, that ramp up of, like, we found Rizelle actually applied because of a Twitter space I did. But the one thing and this is the thing that we always started to think outside the box, because the challenge with GitHub, everything's remote. It's very remote friendly. If you put any junior role, you get 1,000 applications. So what we did is we specifically put out the junior role with the qualifications of a junior. And then anybody who had any DevRel experience, like, we didn't even look at your resume. Like, we just passed.
Wow.
And anybody who had, like, staff engineering experience, like, we passed as well. Because we truly wanted a junior. Like, we did not want someone who, like, already had a deep, like, well of knowledge. And Frank, like, you were actually on that list. So I actually had a pipeline.
I was on the list for what? Yeah,
this is for this role. So I basically, what I do when I go to hire and quitting for Open Sauce is I go do the work. I create the pipeline list of people I would reach out to convince to do that role. And people who are listening, they know they've got a DM for me of, like, hey, we got to just think, like, let's just jump on a chat or a call.
Was this when I was a newly DevRel at New Relic?
No, this is pre-New Relic. And this is the reason why I did that video on my channel, because I noticed you because during the pandemic, we took over the YouTube channel. So basically, everything GitHub, we're already remote, so, like, we were fine. It's just we had an office that everyone else went remote to. And then we just stopped travel. So because DevRel stopped traveling, we had to figure out what DevRel was going to do during the pandemic. And
that was the main job before.
And at that time, I had just started streaming in January of 2020 on Twitch. So on Twitch, I started live streaming me building Open Sauce, the previous version. And then I started doing a bunch of research of, like, Twitch streaming. Mm. And then I learned pretty quickly about the cut over to YouTube. And then I started looking at streamers and then YouTubers in the dev space.
Because,
like, my assumption as a established developer working at GitHub, I never used YouTube as a place to learn. I always, like, just went directly to Pluralsight or something like that. So I didn't know there was a whole
Pluralsight
ecosystem.
Yeah.
But what I am is I'm just, like, a serial deep learner where I'll just spend like 12 weeks on a thing. So I just got deep into YouTube and streaming. And then I started looking for anybody who was doing content on YouTube, like, throw them into a doc. Mm. And then when we were preparing to hire for the role, it's like, you got to convince your... So I had a senior director on me. Now he's a VP of developer relations, Martin Woodward. Like, I have to go pitch him and say, hey, we need a role. This is a skill set we need. Here's the persona on the pipeline that we potentially would reach out to, because we'd get 1,000 applications. So in order to pad the applications, I go reach to a bunch of, and this is like, there's no what do you call it? What's the thing where you have to hire so many people who are under
pipeline?
They just got rid of it basically in the last couple weeks. Affirmative action. So yes, like, there's no affirmative action, so I can say whatever I want now. But I would actually pad anybody I hired, I'd pad with underrepresented and female people that fit that bill, and I'd reach out to all of them and be like, hey, I noticed you. I love the work you're doing. Let's just jump on a call. You get to know me. And the hit rate was pretty high for folks to apply and for them to get to first and second and third interview was pretty high as well, because I was specifically headhunting for them.
Wow.
So, like, basically, I spent a lot of time in 2021 looking at YouTubers and Twitch streamers. And not everyone was a fit. Some folks, I think, like, Jesse is now at Mongo. James Koo Quick, he spent some time at Planet Scale. But there are all these, like, up-and-coming folks. And also, I talked to a bunch of other folks in DevRel who hired and interviewed all the same people as me. So, and like the thing that you like, we all talk to each other. Like, if you're doing DevRel at this place and that place and that place, like, we're all
very small
to each other.
Community, very tight.
It is very, very small, very tight. And like, my persona is like, I don't need 100,000. Like, congrats on 100,000 on YouTube. Like, I've never had that goal of 100,000 on anything or this many followers, because my best work is like in DMs. So, like, if we can do some backroom deals and partner content, like, they did content with Stripe when I was at GitHub. And did like a big partnership. Actually, I was at a conference and the head of DevRel at Stripe pitched me on this idea of like sponsoring developers on GitHub. And at the time, we had just hired this new PM, Devin Zugel, who was standing next to me. I was like, oh, you should talk to Devin. She's actually working on that problem. They built GitHub sponsors together.
Wow.
So like, my game is I can be in the back room, the party planning, networking. Like, hey, have you met Chris? Like, Chris, have you met this person? Like, why don't you guys talk and see if there's like collaboration opportunity?
There's so much power behind that.
Yes, because I just introduced a new CTO at a startup, that former GitHub employee, CTO at a startup. Someone, VC was like, hey, I'm doing some content. Would love to get an intro to this person. I'm like, okay, cool. Intro to that person. That person's a person who actually did my technical screen at GitHub. And I'm indebted to them because I got the job because of that experience. And now, like, this person's like heavy hitter in the scene, big open source maintainer, now CTO of a new startup. And like, I'm giving him intros to VCs. He's giving me intros to like engineers. But you don't need to put that, like, I'm not blasting that on Twitter. I'm not like, you never know what interaction is going to come into. So like, you DM me, I take a look at your LinkedIn, or I take a look at who you are, where you're coming from. If it's interesting, I'll say yes. If you give me a good pitch of like, hey, I'm just graduating my boot camp, have a couple questions. Like, cool, what are the questions? Like, we don't need to jump on a call. Like, I'll just type out an entire, like, I'm about to write a blog. I wrote a blog post in Dev2 this week because of a Twitter DM on how to approach finding GitHub issues for doing open source. And it was because someone asked me a question and I gave them a very long-winded blog post that answer.
That's amazing. It just shows, right? I mean, it shows how it's very important, from my experience, how it's very important to find the right people you work under, right? For me, my first time in DevRel, my manager was Jonan Scheffler at New Relic. Amazing. Amazing manager. I still talk to him. He'll be on here in a couple of weeks as well. Hands down, the best manager I've ever had. And why? Because I noticed that every manager I had after him, I compared to him. Right? Very, very forgiving, very understanding, and wants to help you, wants to promote you every chance he gets to help you, right? You know, compared to other people where it's just very different. And so I'm really happy to see that the people got to work under you. And Pachi too. Oh, Pachi's amazing. I'm very happy for her. And so one thing I want to bring up next is, okay, and I wanted to talk about this earlier, so here we go. You're at Microsoft. You're at GitHub.
Yeah.
GitHub gets acquired.
Yep.
By Microsoft. When do you first hear of that acquisition? Actually, don't talk about that. Never mind. Don't talk about that. When you first hear about it, you know what's going to happen. What's going through your mind? You're counting your options, right? How many shares you have. You're trying to convert that after tax. What's going on in your mind right now? Because everyone wants to go through that. I hope I go through that at Airbyte. That would be amazing.
So, mind you, I have a finance degree. So, like, I'm doing that in my head.
You don't need a calculator.
Percentage, the 0.00 percentage of the company I had. But, like, even before that, I had to make the decision of leaving Netlify, which is like a rocket ship. They were just getting adoption. Everyone's heard of Netlify today. When I left in 2018, not everyone had heard of Netlify. Like, we were just getting started.
Yeah.
And had so much more. Like,
did you bring on Jason? Did you hire Jason?
I actually talked to Jason. No, I didn't. I didn't. I was just a normal engineer. Sarah Drasner was the person who was coming on right after I left. So, like, the offer was signed. Wow. Everything, the deal was made. And like, I didn't really know Sarah that well. I'd seen her speak quite a bit, and she was at Microsoft as well. But at the time, I was expecting my second kid. Mm-hmm. And mind you, I was making, at that time, $110K. So I had a good amount of equity vested, about two years and a couple months. And I felt like...
You're talking
like
about GitHub, right? You're talking about GitHub?
No, this is at Netlify. Netlify. I had 2 years vested. But I was expecting a kid, so I knew what was going to happen. And my first kid, I had to mention, I had 2 weeks off and back to work. So GitHub, at that time, gave me 5 months off. And when my wife was like, and this goes back to like your personal burn, like when you make almost not you, I was making a salary, but it wasn't enough to like have more than a one bedroom with two kids. So at that point, I could even have some life changing money, or wait, I continue to invest on life changing money years down the road. And that's the difference. Like a lot of folks burn out on this one decision, which is like you might have opportunity later in the next one, or you get laid off, and then you have 6 months. Maybe even some people like 18 months between jobs trying to figure out the next thing.
Terrible. So tough.
It is terrible. And the thing I always mention, like Danny Thompson mentions this all the time, like, you know, you got to build out your LinkedIn. You got to build out your profile, especially if you're coming from another place. Mm-hmm. You got to like have a story, like what's your elevator pitch. And at the time I was interviewing at like Stripe, Square, Pinterest, Airbnb. I think I had a intro to Netflix at that point. Yeah. But I wasn't getting in those jobs because I didn't have the data structures, the algorithms. I was just like on the job. I knew how to write code, could like ship a thing, but couldn't like ship a thing for scale. So I needed like something on my belt or on my resume that had like a notable name. Because like if you have a notable name, then it's tech is like super inequitable. Like if you once you understand that it's not fair, then you start looking for your unfair advantage. And the entire time in my career, I've always looked for the unfair advantage. Of, I happen to know sales, so like get me in the door and I'll help you do some DevRel work and write blog posts and whatever. Like, I'm here because I can provide value in addition to writing code. And so GitHub, like very, very established company, later stage growth, a lot of success. At that point, like I don't know if profitability where they were at that point, but like they were doing very well. Like enterprise was great. Like a lot of folks assume because GitHub was not doing well, that's why they got acquired. They got acquired because they had no CEO. Like the last founder decided he didn't want to do it after 10 years. So it was either get a CEO or get acquired.
Yeah.
There's no IPO in the future. So the rumor was before I joined, I asked everyone, including like folks I used to work with, folks that were at GitHub. I actually interviewed, had coffee at GitHub with current employees that I got a network or a connection to, and just asked them like, what's the deal here? Like this place is crazy, or like, and the rumor was basically Microsoft was going to acquire them. So there was no deal, or just like, everyone had a rumor about it, like in the ex-employee Slack, but like, there was like, I can't point to an actual conversation like that. But what happened was GitHub was working on a project called Everett. Everett was basically the bigger project, what GitHub Actions turned into be. GitHub Action was step one for the big project, which was GitHub, or what GitHub was going to ship. They shopped it around, and then Microsoft was like, we should buy you.
And I think it was for $1 billion, like, right?
7.5.
Oh, okay, I'm way off. Hold on, I need a drink.
Yeah. So the question of like, what after that happened, I joined because I wanted 5 months off.
Yeah.
And then I was just going to go back. I was just wanted a resume tick of like, I worked at GitHub. Then I could go to startup and do like bigger and better things.
Yeah.
And that was always the goal, like 1 to 2 years.
Mm.
But I joined February. By June, there was an announcement, like there was a rumor. And then 6 hours later, there was like, oh, it was like on Hacker News. And then 6 hours later, it was like,
so your shares didn't vest yet? Microsoft announced it.
No, I did not vest at all.
Oh, hold on. Sit. Oh, my God. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I was like within the, so I was 6 months into my 4 months into my first year cliff.
Yeah.
But the way, like, and this is some education for folks who are like thinking about like what exits look like, later stage companies, early stage companies. So like I was very later stage. I was at that point 6 months before, 7 months before the acquisition completed. So the way GitHub did it is anybody who invested at least a year cliff, you get cash in the bank. And your next paycheck.
Yeah.
Which is like, some people got millions of dollars just like in the bank. Just like, there you go. Go pay taxes. Which, I mean, I'd rather have there's other problems you could have. Yeah. Like $1 million in the bank, cool, pay half in taxes. But because I was before the cliff,
yeah.
Anybody who was before the December 37 cutoff, like everyone got accelerated vested if you hit that cutoff. And then you just continue to vest.
Did you hit the cutoff? Because you joined before.
No, I joined February. Oh, you joined February. So I didn't hit the cutoff. So what that meant is that I never held GitHub stock.
Yeah.
My stock converted to Microsoft stock instantly. Yeah. So once I hit my cliff, my 1 year cliff in February post acquisition, I didn't have Microsoft stock, which is better.
So, exactly. That's exactly what. So if let's say you had 8,000 shares, that would be amazing. I'm not saying you did, and then that would turn to 8,000 RSUs.
There's a conversion. So like GitHub got purchased by Microsoft at $7.5 billion valuation. Depending on how, let's say there's 100,000 stocks that are live, there's going to be, let's just say there's 7.5 million stocks. So then everything's like $10 per share, mm-hmm. which wasn't the share price, but let's just say that was the share price. At the time, Microsoft stock price was $82, $82 to $85. So if it's $10, then you get 8 Microsoft shares. So that's like the, that was how they, so these are rough numbers. This is not the exact numbers.
Yeah, but that's way better though.
It was better because then you're vested.
And I felt bad for you. Now I don't.
No, don't feel bad. I definitely, life changing. Like I literally bought a house during this time or after this time. So what I'm getting at is, so I had Microsoft shares that were vesting that were sitting in a Fidelity or a brokerage account. And then they turned into options. So I had the option to buy. So again, rough numbers, not real numbers, but at $10 a share, I would get $80 worth of Microsoft stock. So the conversion was amazing. Obviously, I had to pay taxes and all this stuff.
That's
but
totally fine.
Better than just getting cash in your hand.
Yeah.
So then, but the thing is, when I left GitHub, the stock price was $300. So this is like the thing where like you your conversation like about Airbyte taking salary, like if Airbyte gets purchased by Microsoft or goes in IPO, is like the numbers are like funny numbers, like they're, it's like, ooh, does not compute, rounding errors type stuff. So this is like, and these are like the where tech is inequitable. Like I've worked with folks. I worked with one engineer at my first job in San Francisco whose both parents were doctors. He was from Idaho, and he basically went back. He like did a, I don't know what he went to school for, like pre-med or something like that. Decided he didn't want to do that. So then he went and got a CS degree and then worked on his parents' basically dime, living in San Francisco, like right in the marina, like most expensive place, like one of the most expensive places with no roommates. And like just engineered as a job. Like the guy had, like basically had like no debt, nothing to worry about. And like was just living life. And
no debt.
Which is like, but that like that's the, when I joined GitHub, the one thing I noticed, like first job I ever had that I had other black engineers that I work with, other black employees in tech. And because I only worked at small companies at that time. So, Netlify did have black employees. So that's that isn't a misstep there. But what I'm getting at is when people got all this like real Microsoft money, people who lived in one bedroom apartments at the marina, like, it's like, oh, whatever. Let's put it in the brokerage account. My guy will
just let it grow.
Yeah. But then like, there's this, like this whole like system of like people who made it in the tech, but now it's like first time money. Like that's the point where now you can like accelerate or mess up or do whatever. Yeah, so it's like, it's stuff that you want to educate yourself on. Get on the Reddits, like get a group, like join the Discord and like the random finance channel.
So
like,
important.
Ask the questions because there's a lot of bad advice out there, but like I would get advice for people who have lived it and have been there before. And that was super helpful for me for this transition.
I want to go back to that transition in just a second. I do want to bring up a sponsor. Just kidding. No, I don't want to bring up a sponsor, but
I was waiting for it.
Making, 160, 180, 200, and eventually more per year. Only now I'm managing my finances. Why? I was making 45K a year, 80K a year, living in California. That's nothing, right? In California, especially when you've been poor your whole life, you don't know how to have no money. Then I started making 160K, now 200, right? And I just spent every dollar that came in because it's crazy. You see $12,000 in your bank after taxes, $14,000. It's insane. Yeah. And only as of a couple months ago, and that's not including the $30,000 to $40,000 I made on YouTube per month, right? It's, you know, right, everything just coming in, and I'm like, what is going on? Everyone wants to hire me, right? So I'm not worried about a job, and I spent it all, right?
Wow.
Stupid. And I regret that. And the thing is, no one in my family taught me that. And I want to talk about this more often in my tech channel. But when engineers start making that money, you don't know how to do with it. I think it's very important to learn as early as possible how to manage that. Like, don't live at your means. Live below, if hopefully way below. Like now, I make like 12, 13K per month after taxes, and I only have like 6,000. I support my parents too. $5,000 in bills, if not four. Right, if I sell my car.
Yeah.
Right. So like now a little way below, and gosh, now just the money just stacking. I can buy a house in cash in a couple of years, right? And like I wish I did that sooner.
Yeah.
And I didn't. Is that a problem?
Yeah, this is the thing that oh yeah, 100%. Like especially with these boot camp grads that actually strike a big, because like the chance of you even getting the role after boot camp is like even lowering. Like to continue to stay employed, like the opportunity is like constricting. So you always, like, always say with boot camps, like, you always are 2 years behind the next thing. So, like, AI, you're 6 months behind. So, like, go learn how to use AI, engineering, and APIs. But this is like, the sort of conundrum with, like, NBA players, NFL players. Like, there's podcasts and books on this. And there's, like, programs now for those folks. Because in reality, like, what we make as tech employees is, like, it's like 12th man on an NBA team.
Yeah. Oh, true.
Or like, which is still squad. A lot. Yeah, it's a. I mean, but if you work, if you think NBA, you're like, oh, dude, this guy's got it. Like, they're $24 million contracts. Like, that's insane. But like, when you think of like the sort of like practice squad or the G League, now we're in like that same sort of like level. But people burn out because you only play in the NBA for 4 years, and with like
NFL's three.
Tech, like once. Yeah, and like with tech employees, it's two. If you're coming from a boot camp, because like once you hit that ceiling of like I can't accelerate, to either, you know, you gotta like move out of San Francisco and take like a menial job at a healthcare company in Tennessee or something like that, which is not a knock.
Which
but,
I've
like,
done. There's like I lived in Nashville. Yeah, well, oh God, I moved there. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, yeah, I have so many questions about your background. So like, if you're ever in the Bay Area, I'd love to have you on my podcast to learn more about the full story. I know you share a lot with your videos, but. Yeah, it's like the thing that you mentioned in passing, like you take care of your parents. Like I've taken care of my parents, my grandparents. Like I don't take care of my parents, but like my grandparents, like they've all gone through like, oh, we got to go to home. We got to like set this up. I'm like helping my grandma sell her house in LA. Like, it's a thing of like, if you can have parents who are doctors and give pay for your place in the marina so you can have like the 100K job until you level up, like that's a great situation. I'm super proud of you. I'm happy that your parents like support you and stuff like that. But for other folks who are like trying to break in tech and want to like sustain, it's hard, and there's a lot of pressure I have some friends who works at a very large company, a streaming platform, and he has a very similar situation where he's like all right, I don't want to out my friend, but I want to be very clear. So like Netflix pays bank
$300 to $500
minimum salary for a seat. Yeah, so when I was working at
You said Netflix. So I'm like, dang, you work there too.
No, but I was interviewing at Netflix at the time, and I didn't want to make the drive down there, Redwood City, Los Gatos.
It's far.
But there was a Netflix employee who was a senior engineer who was like, I had coffee with him because I would do my networking thing, and he was at LinkedIn. No, sorry, he was at Netflix, and he moved to LinkedIn, and because he moved to the city, I was like, oh, let's just grab a coffee since you're in the city. And he told me a salary. It was like $425K. And I was like, oh, that's what's like stock? He's like, no, it's not. That's the base pay. And I was like, what? You could make that much in tech? And my brain melted. This was like 6 months before I got the job offer from GitHub. Did not compute. I didn't know like that's what people were making. This is why how people can afford to live. I thought everyone was struggling like me. So then that completely changed. Because Netflix, that's before they give you like the options to buy and stuff like that, or the RSUs. Because Netflix is like all salary. It's double. Like there are folks who work on specific teams or their total compensation is over $1 million. And this is like not, and like you start looking at all these other AI companies, it's like, it is insane how much people are getting paid. And what's like, basically what I'm getting at is like, the goal should never be like, let's just chase $1 million salary, because I think if you're chasing that,
you'll never be happy.
You'll be very disappointed. Yeah, there was like a Reddit thread of someone who was like, could get a Fang job because they were so good at the interview, but they couldn't keep it after 12 months. Because like once you do real work, because they only knew how to do interviews. They didn't know how to build real stuff. And they've been doing that since college. And they were like, oh, what do I do? How do I actually learn how to build things? Like, go build things. Like, does not compute. But like, if you want to get a Fang job, there's a pathway for you there. I would say work for sustainable growth, like build a network, understand the product you're building, like talk to the PM and like show that you are invested and validate this product by, like, you don't have to talk to users. Like, that's not the goal, but like, go talk to users if you want to. Obviously, ask permissions. Don't just like go out of, be out of pocket. But yeah, anyway, like this, I think about my journey, because that's like this point, almost 10 years I've been doing this since 2013. So 2013, November. Or sorry, yeah, November 2013 is like when I sort of jumped in and was all in. There's like so many changes in the industry, but like the entire time I've just sort of been trucking along, doing my thing. Like, I didn't know Netlify was going to be like going
to
be.
And then you go to GitHub right after?
Yeah, and like I didn't know GitHub was going to be what they're today. Like, I had rumors, but like I just was going for the 5 months off, which I didn't even finish that story. Announcement June, my daughter was born July, so I took five
after
months
the
off
announcement.
Right after that announcement.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Oh wow!
So I came back. I came back, and we found out what the stock price was, because it was like at that point, everyone was kind of distracted with Microsoft, and they were just spending every all hands. Every talk was like, we don't know what this like. Here are the details.
That's
here's
so
the next
exciting.
Step. Here's like the background check you have to do. Like, it was it was just kind of really distracting for a while. So I left to go to paternal leave, and then came back because that's why I joined GitHub. Is I wanted the time off. I wanted to be with my kid, and super rewarding. The entire time I was working at open source, like just like working on like what that would look like, and then come back, and I'm a Microsoft employee.
One thing I want to bring up is, all right, post life after that, right? And I want to go, and I know I want to go. I have a couple questions, and. You make bank from those options, or RSUs now, cheese, right? Has that changed?
Technically, they were NSOs that converted. NSOs. They were options, okay. So the NSOs are the options that are very tax advantaged. So
huge.
Like you could pay your pennies, and then you just pay taxes on the pennies, and then you pay the difference. So you can do a cashless exercise. So like you're not paying out of pocket once there's been an exit.
Yeah. Great,
but
great.
You still got to pay the taxes.
Of course. Always, please. Life
changing
after.
Money.
Obviously, you left, right, to do your own company. So you're pretty like when I say secure, you're comfortable, right, and you have the ability, the opportunity now to try new things, right?
Yeah.
But you left, GitHub. But you left Microsoft. You left. The RSUs that you would renew every year, I'm assuming. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. It was an amazing amount of money.
Okay. And so what I noticed in tech right now, who was it? Kelsey Hightower.
Retired.
What was he before he left? He was
a distinguished engineer.
Okay, aka making a million, if not millions per year, right? At Google.
You're not too far off.
Oh, I'm not far off at all. More than a million, guaranteed. He left, right? We got Jason, who left Netlify.
Yep.
Okay. Who else left? For example, this who doesn't know Mayuko? She left after joining Netflix. I'm burned out. So all these people making bank in tech, right? I don't know what you make at Netlify at that time, but making good money, right? But so many people are quitting now, especially people who make content in particular. Even my manager at New Relic, the director of DevRel, he was the director of DevRel at a Web3 company, starting his own startup now, right? And then you left, right?
Yeah.
Why are so many people leaving? Is it burnout? Yeah, it's the same thing over and over. We're making more money than doctors, right? Like more than money than pharmacists, you name it.
Yeah, I mean, so when the pandemic hit, like tech did not miss a beat. Like basically some companies had to readjust. Like Airbnb had some challenges and they had to do some layoffs. But for the first 2 years of like 2020, 2021, tech did not miss a beat. Mm. And then what happened was, like, I run a newsletter, which I haven't done since I left GitHub, called Teach Me How to Dougie. And
love your names.
It's specifically. I can name a thing. Like, pitch me. I can consult for you. Technically, I can't consult. 100% of my time's in open source. But what I'm getting at is, everyone had a time to take a beat, and we're DevRel. And this is the thing that I've always complained about DevRel, because the entire time I did DevRel, I did not want to do DevRel. Like, I actually applied to a job on the ecosystem engineering team for a senior engineer role at GitHub. Working with the current chief product officer was running this team, and I had had him on my podcast just like this, and we had stayed connected, and he was like, hey, I got a role for you. Do you, like, apply? Specifically to work on GraphQL. And I didn't get that job. Like, I flunked the sort of technical screen. Yeah. I think, to be honest, if I wrote some test, I think I could have showed I knew what I was doing. But I spent way more time just, like, telling jokes and, like, writing code, and did not actually, like, solidify my knowledge. So I didn't get that role. 2 weeks later, he says, hey, there's another role for you, DevRel. And at the time, I was, like, trying to leave DevRel. I was trying to be an engineer because I never wanted to do DevRel. Like, I did it begrudgingly because I approached it very differently than most DevRels. Like, I'm not trying to count people who show up to meetup or how many people live streaming, or even, like, the best thing about this is, like, if people comment below of, like, hey, love that story, love this thing, I have a question here. Like, that's the engagement piece, and that's what I always look for. Who cares about views? Who cares about, like, watch time? All views and watch time, they all make sense.
Engagement.
But if you can get engagement, your watch time is already going up because someone took the time to comment. Yeah. Like, TikTok, every TikTok little strategy I did was, like, just get a way for them to open the comments and have the video replay over and over and over again. To, like, if I said that you can get I did a video where I said you can get a Fang salary without joining Fang.
What would,
like,
it
stop
be?
Trying to interview for Google. Get a job at, like, Airbyte. You can get a Fang salary, because the thing is, you can get, if you get the stock up front and Airbyte hits the next tier, like, you can get the raise in a couple years and then get Fang level salary. But everyone wants everything up front. So anyway, not a knock on, like, your situation, but what I'm getting at is, I always thought differently on how to approach developer relations, which is all about the networking part. It's not about getting on stage. So when everyone was trying to get on stage, do another event, travel the world, and that shut down, we had to take a step back and be like, okay, what is the team going to do? And we had this YouTube channel with 80,000 subscribers that never got videos unless there was a conference, and we're GitHub. Yeah. So we just, like, hey, let's just do all this research on folks like yourself. Because at the time, I think you were in Tennessee at the time, and you were doing, like, really good talking head with the drone shots.
Jeez, you did watch it. That's crazy.
Yeah, and this is, like, that was, like, what we were emulating. And, like, there's a new video on GitHub's channel with, like, Mercedes-Benz, where they had a whole production and staff. Like, we were headed towards that way of editing our own content. But at the end of the day, GitHub's got money. Yeah. So they now have people who edit the videos and do all that work and have a team in-house. But we had to prove that we could do that. And we grew the YouTube channel, like, 200,000, and TikTok to, like, 40,000. I don't know what the numbers are now, but what I'm getting at is, like, we had a space to show our growth. But I forgot what the original question
why
was.
Why do you think so many people are leaving?
Oh, yeah. Why are they leaving? Oh, because during that time, when everyone was doing the research, I did a blog post, not because of me, but I did a blog post about how the trend of developer relations is cutting over the not getting on talks and doing stage, but the creating content.
I've read that
and,
like, blog post.
Content creation was the centrifuge for the future of DevRel. And it was true. 100%. Everyone shifted to be content creators and building content, blog posts, tweets, etc. And everyone looks at your brand and your numbers based on that. So if you're, like, Jason did a live stream that he did pre-Netlify, joined Netlify, did the entire thing, grew it till now it's like, I'm getting sponsorship that's, like, matching my salary. Like, why don't I just consult?
It's insane.
And, like, over exceeding. And, like, I know, like, Theo, he's doing a bunch of content. Like, he's pretty open about sponsored content as well. Like, the content, it's, like, it's meeting expectations, exceeding expectations for salary. So then if you, like, build this brand, so imagine, like, open source, you build a brand. And, like, I was doing a very similar thing. I was on the same path as Jason and Theo and was building my content arm. But I just kept getting up the ladder. And
slowed you down.
Like, my next step was senior director. Yeah. At this point, I'm, like, approaching the seven-figure total compensation. I already was approaching seven-figure compensation, total compensation, so including stocks. But the next bump is basically now I've crossed the chasm. Like, this is now I'm paying a weird tax.
And now you're making much less.
Much less today.
For sure. You know, start of life, Right. You regret that?
No, not at all. Because I get to. So like, the reason why Jason's doing his thing is he owns the entire operation. No one's asking him, "Hey, you spent way too much time on this."
Oh my gosh,
these numbers don't make sense.
I hate hearing that.
And like, the thing I always wanted to work on with open source at GitHub is get more folks to do open source. Like, because open source is the backdoor to get your job. Like, you're a bootcamp grad. You're like, I did Lambda school. I can't get an interview for the life of me. With open source, you can find out what companies have open source projects, find out who to talk to, go have a conversation in the issues and the Discord. And like, I'm going to ship a video on our YouTube shorts about, I played high school football. In high school football, I played receiver. You go stand next to a coach and you run plays in. If you want to go play, you stand next to a coach. So if you want to go work at this company, you go into Discord, you look at the conversation to say, hello, this is me. I'm just going to be here, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But don't be so demanding. Just like, be like water, like experience what the community looks like. And then what happens is you see the same issues over and over again. Like, oh, this is broken. And in open source, we could not run our local development environment without passing environment keys. So some guy in Ireland basically rebuilt our developer setup with the Docker image. Super trivial. We had no time for it. Everyone who works at open source could do this with their eyes closed. But because everyone else couldn't contribute to it, our open source API, he built it. And he's built a couple things like that, pretty heavy-hitting things. But it's because he came in, he asked the right questions, he was watching everyone complain about, hey, I can't make a contribution because of this, and he went and fixed it for folks. There's an engineer who's a staff engineer right now at GitHub who, in college, started making contributions to Electron, which used to be owned by GitHub. Now it's part of the JS Foundation. Got his job, full-time engineer last year at college because he made contributions
to Electron. I've heard about this. Yeah. That's amazing. I have learned so much. I was not expecting this. Like, I mean, I expected to learn a lot, right? And just about, you know, it's amazing to see what you've gone through, approaching seven figures. I mean, so I have a question.
Yeah, this is pre-tax seven figures.
Yes, of course. It's always going to be for a long time. It's going to be pre-tax, right? Meaning, so it's half. But either way, though, that's amazing. Congrats on accomplishing that, right? I make good money, and I just want to, you know, I don't care if it's on the podcast, so I make pretty good money in tech. Another company reached out trying to offer $240K, you name it. No, I'm not going to do that. But like, for the longest time, I could have done my own thing, right? On sponsors, I was making 30, 40K. Now, I took a break from YouTube, so now I'm not making that again. Probably, hopefully, will soon. But what pushed you to like do that, though? Yes, you had all that cash from Microsoft. Helps a lot. Yeah. Was it because you raised money for your startup?
I mean, I decided to do it before I raised money. The reason for that is like, so I got into tech because I had a kid. At the time, I was getting my MBA in sales and so had a break to like realize I didn't want to do sales anymore. So now he's going to turn 10 next month. So
literally 10 years in tech. That's amazing.
Yeah. So at that point, I'm like, I've done a cool things. Like, I could just continue to elevate, become a VP of something at GitHub, or like cut over, be at Microsoft, or do something else. And like,
were you working a lot of hours?
No, that was the other thing, is I was getting my job done before 10 a.m. So like, I had team members in Europe, I had team members in Australia, but I what you do, like Mr. Beast basically has a team. The way he can accelerate growth is because he has people who are editing. He's not doing anymore. He has people doing this. So like, what I am nothing short of is ideas. Like I don't have actually a certificate for my MBA. I dropped out like the last semester.
Of course, just like every successful person I know.
Yeah, I mean, I have a college degree, but it's in finance, and the MBA, it's like I learned enough that I can be dangerous with. But like, do I regret walking away from all that conversation or not taking the Netflix job or not doing the whatever the thing? It's like, no, because today I get to work on what I want. And I can make an impact in industry in a way I want to make impact. And I own a large portion of that decision. So at our current valuation, like I still would be making more if we were just like, you know, current valuation, I'm walking away. I get to walk away with more than I would have made at GitHub. Obviously, most startups fail. But the one thing that a lot of people don't think about this, like most startups do fail. But most startups fail at a $25 million exit. So that's like, failure is not hitting $1 billion.
Sorry, you mean the CEO walks out with quite a bit of change.
No, I mean everyone who takes equity, every early employee gets percentages, not.
So let's just say the company I work at, let's just say, right, we have a long burn rate, very long burn rate, right? Yeah, let's say it didn't do well, right? If it didn't work out, is that what you're talking about? People walk away with.
Yeah, I mean, if you have ownership in a company and you vested,
wow,
and let's say, okay, the failure for Airbyte is they sell for $900 million, so just below $1 billion exit. But percentage of 9 million is every investor gets paid. So at the time that they drop the money, it's like they're the valuation. Like, actually, let me just look this up because I can give you real numbers on Crunchbase.
You're looking at Airbyte shares right now.
Not their shares. I'm looking at what's actually valuation. It's funny. Airbyte actually doesn't have a valuation that's here we go. I'm looking at the wrong
$1.5 billion.
Yeah, $1.5 billion raised $180 million. So the money that's been raised, if they sell for $900 million, $180 million goes to investors for that percentage.
Oh, they get the money back, of course, yeah.
And then all founders are then paid, and then all employees and other contractors, stuff like
which
that.
Which, of course, gets diluted too. But,
failure, if let's say you own 1% of the company, like at a $900 million exit, once everyone's paid, like 1% of $900 million, like,
what is that? I'm bad at math. I'm just curious.
$9 million. Sorry, my 10% would be 90. Yeah, yeah, so 1%.
Sorry, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I'm really bad at math. If you
but
can't
like
tell.
Going wow. back to like your personal finance and like sort of spending the money that you were making. If you had $5 million in the bank and you only lived off 2% interest, like you would make, rule of 72. I forgot what the finance calculation in my mind, but basically you'd make a pretty decent salary, like 75 to 90K.
Mm-hmm.
Someone comment below what the actual math is, like keep me honest. But what I'm getting at is like 75K living in, I don't know, Wichita,
Philippines?
Kansas,
jeez.
Philippines.
Oh my
God. Yeah.
God, dude.
Singapore, like pick a place, yeah. Buy a condo in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And like come up to go see the family every now and then. Like,
and that's still work. I'll never retire. Right. I'm going to continue working for as long as possible. Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the, anyway, I recommend anybody who has the risk tolerance to go start a company. And if you don't have that tolerance to start the company and have that much stress, go join a company early stage at least once. 3 month contract, 6 months.
I joined Series B, unfortunately, not Series A. Oh, I wish I did. But
yeah, I wrote a blog post on LinkedIn about my experience of being seed to Series B, or sorry, seed to Series A. I actually left right before the Series B closed at Netlify, but I left right before the announcement, or way before the announcement, but it closed. But at that point, like, I joined employee three, like we're all working on cool things. We're trying things out. We're seeing what's going to work. Then the inflection curve, like within 3 to 6 months, like the thing's going to work out.
Yeah.
So like at that point, I knew the thing was going to take off, like by the time I left. But again, it comes back to like no regrets. I still own stock in Netlify, and I will do in that exit. Cause I already know how much my stock is worth the effort. Like I'm not complaining about like what I got paid at Netlify, because I think sometimes we get too over indexed on like the experience of like through salary, but the experience I got working with that team at that time is something you don't get normally at a company. Like at a Series B company that where you join, there's established process, like you don't get to touch everything you could touch. Like I was learning Kubernetes as like a bootcamp grad.
Yeah.
And because that's what Netlify was built on. So, like, I got a really good, strong understanding of that stuff to know would GitHub Action ship 2 years later when I joined. And they like, oh, do you know anything about CI? I was like, actually, I worked at a company that, like, CI/CD was the thing that built the entire, like, one-click deploy thing.
Yeah.
So then when I started pitching GitHub Actions, it was like rebuild Netlify as GitHub Actions.
Gosh.
And that was, like, my talk that I was going around the country doing. Yeah. Actually, the world, because I was actually traveling. I went to Paris and pitched this talk as well. No regrets. Like, honestly, this is, like, so much money sitting in there. It's a hard time right now to, like, break into tech.
Very hard right now.
Yeah, the best thing you do is, like, make connections and network. like have a conversation and don't be awkward. Like this, like be, let's provide value. Like a lot of times people jump in my DMs and they're like, hi. And I don't know how to respond to that.
Yeah.
Like I can say hi back, but I just know where this is going to go. It's like, why am I engaging? Tell me why you're here. Like force me to respond to something like, hey, I saw you on Krishan's podcast. Like, that was great. What you said here.
Get ready to receive a lot of messages. I received too many to the point I can't respond to all of them, which sucks. Right.
Yeah.
Well, what's one last thing I want to ask from you before we end this. If there's one thing that people need to learn from your life that you want to share, right? That can be life-changing to them. That can help them, right? The amount of messages I receive, Chris, it's so hard to get a job in tech. Even for me, I'm interviewing, you know, here and there just to see my value. And out of only 30 interviews, maybe I get a job offer. And when I say 30 interviews, that's throughout a year. I don't, or maybe, you know, it's not a lot at one time, I mean. So what's that message you want to give to other people? What can they learn from you? In today's tech.
I get a ton of messages as well. Yeah. Like I've been at this at 10 years. I'm episode number 2 at CodeDB podcast. So like Saran, like we literally came up at the same time.
I'll put the links in the description.
I was second guest on the podcast. Like my story, my early journey story is there. So people reach out to me all the time. My statement I give to everyone who's listening to answer this question is give first. Like it, at the time of your career, if you're trying to break in tech, you are in a position where you need to take as much as you can. So like there's plenty of stuff to take.
What do you mean
you
take?
Give first.
Oh, okay. I should take value.
Yeah. So
giving and
taking. Yeah. So give value first. Yeah. So it'd be like, hey, actually I translated this stuff in the Chinese. Like, let me, I don't know. Like people do the stuff like that. Like I told you this guy, like rewrote our Docker image to like help everyone contribute. We have a pizza oven, part of our product that has a cloud hosted offering that we haven't been public about yet, but it's open source. Like people are shipping valuable contributions.
Yeah.
Which gets us noticed. Like I'm noticing all these folks and I'm like, have my list. We're going to be hiring an engineer next month. And we specifically are looking for our specific persona, skill set. And that skill set is like, are you cool with giving first?
Yeah.
Like, can you contribute to open source without any sort of semblance of a job or any sort of return or any sort of payment? And I think when for folks who are, one more thing I'll say is I always pitch this to everyone who reached out to me is like, if you want to get in the NBA and LeBron James was playing pickup games across the street with Bronny, with his son, like you'd probably be there. Like you want to be where the action is. You want to be where the network is. Mm-hmm. So go do it.
Yeah.
But a lot of times like we just sort of like sit in our remote houses buying like all the sort of everything we need that doesn't actually get us a job.
Yeah.
Like focus on being in a place where the action is, because that's how you break in, and that's how people know who you are. Mm-hmm. And that place, that sort of pickup game, is open source. The best engineers give their time away for free.
Yeah.
And these best engineers will mentor anybody who's willing to give first. So if you're like, give me a good first issue, like that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you're like, you know what, I actually sat and read all the documentation, was in the Discord for like a week, did this thing, reviewed all these PRs without even anybody noticing, and now I'm ready to like give.
Yeah.
Like that's valuable.
Yeah.
But most people are like, react. I want to contribute. Tell me how. Yeah. It's like, this is going
to
take a while.
In this modern time when it's very difficult, even for experienced people to get a job right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
But the challenge is the experienced people are getting the jobs that all the new folks are meant to have.
Yeah.
And this is like, This is the sake of the ecosystem. Yeah. This is how it always works. And look for your unfair advantage.
Exactly.
And the way to get the unfair advantage, if you, I just met the co-creator of Kubernetes a couple weeks ago. This guy's like constantly contributing to random projects as the SVP of cloud product on Azure. If you just looked at what he was doing, and this is like if I'm giving away some of the secret sauce, but like if you watch this guy and follow him on GitHub and see where he's contributing and you're like, hey, Brendan, like I saw you doing this thing, like I can help out here. Obviously you had to write Go, cause that's what he writes in Go and Rust. But it's like, hey, I saw this thing. It's like, I actually rewrote this and I wrote tests for this and I wrote some documentation. Here's an example on Dev2.
Mm-hmm.
And you just did that for him,
yeah.
Which he might miss it cause he's got a very busy inbox like yourself. Imagine your mentor of being the guy who created Kubernetes. But no one thinks that way.
That's true.
Everyone's thinking of like, I just need to like walk in the React and look for a good first
message. Message people with the most followers on Twitter and tech Twitter.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is like, message the person who's doing the most action, who doesn't have a lot of followers and has enough attention for you. Like Matt Paddock, he's doing tons of content on YouTube right now. The guy writes tons of content around TypeScript. He's like the TypeScript expert. Yeah. Just hit 100,000 subscribers on, well, I don't know about YouTube, but on Twitter, he just hit 100K. A year ago, he had like nothing. He was like 3K or something like that. He had just taken like the job at Vercel. But like at that time, like he's the guy. He's like the guy before Brendan Burns is Brendan Burns, before you are you. Like you, he, you had attention from him a year ago. Now he's like too busy.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So like be like helpful, give first, and like pay attention.
Jeez, golden nuggets.
That's a lot.
Golden nuggets. This has been very helpful. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Hopefully some of this is watchable. Yeah, this is a I know this is longer than the time limit,
I prefer longer episodes. It's just a lot of people don't have a lot of time to give. Right. Everyone's very busy. So yeah, I know. This has been great. This has been great. Seriously. I seriously want to thank you for making time to be in this episode. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And I've learned a lot. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, I'll put the links to your social on the, in the description as well. Hopefully if they can even get the message to you, you gave them advice on how to do that. And so, yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah. And if I could say, sign up to Open Sauce, like that's the secret. Yes. Like we're really building the secret sauce. Like you build a profile, you showcase what you're interested in. So like everything I was sort of explaining, you could do on the platform. So like you don't need to DM random people. Like you need to see where they're making code.
Definitely.